Hey everyone, and welcome to Monday. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. We have a big Monday show after a big Sunday showing in the NFL from some of the NFL's best. OBJ had a big game, but his comments before and after, the big news. Vikings get revenge in an NFC championship rematch in the battle for bragging rights, and Texas no longer belongs to the Cowboys, at least not this Monday morning. Cowboys, Texans, and we are going to pick this one up in overtime. Third and one, Ezekiel Elliott gets stuffed for no gain. Jason Garrett decides we're going to punt. And that decision would cost him as Deshaun Watson finds DeAndre Hopkins for the 49-yard gain. That play would end up setting up the game winner, Kaimi Fairburn. 36-yard field goal for the Texans, who go on to win this game. Dallas and Houston both with 2-3 records. Now, here is the Texans quarterback, Deshaun Watkins, after the win.
As a playmaker, he's one of the best, if not the best receiver in the NFL. So we rely on him. In those situations, he came up big. And playmakers make plays whenever, you know, we need them. And that was a situation where we needed to make a play, and I threw it up for him to make a play, and he did what he had to do.
A lot of people, you know, put him in a box sometimes and think that he's just a running quarterback, but you see the amazing throw that he made at the end. That was an unbelievable throw to put touch on the ball like that. Just seeing how the defender undercut the pass, great ball.
Obviously, it's frustrating. You lose your third road game straight for the most part. And then, as you said, it's the offense hadn't gotten going on the road, and defense, especially with them giving us all the chance they did, making the big plays down there in the red zone, holding them to field goals and keeping us in the game, and we weren't doing our part. It's very frustrating.
All right, CC, it's hard for us to fully blame the Cowboys, at least with their game plan coming into the game. We said, you know what the answer is. The answer is to run Ezekiel Elliott, especially when he's got more than what he had the first couple games, which was 16 carries. They gave him the ball 20 times. What happened? What was the key to the Texans beating this Dallas team?
NFL defenses are going to start to pack the box, put a lot of people at the line of scrimmage. This is what the Dallas Cowboys are going to face. Nick and I, we went back and forth last week talking about it, and Nick was like, listen, don't listen to the game plan. Hey, go against your instincts. If they load the box up, still run the ball.
Do it anyway.
That's what they're going to have to do. That's what the Texans did to them last night. So we can't blame the Cowboys as far as the attempts, because Zeke had the 20 rush attempts. But as talking to you, Jenna, we can blame them for not giving him 21. And on fourth down and one, you got to be able to give Zeke that last carry. On third and one, they end up stopping them. On fourth and one, with the game on the line, I think a little more than four minutes in the overtime. Mm-hmm. Like, with these overtimes being 10 minutes, you have to kind of speed up your decision-making. Like, you can't depend on potentially getting the ball back in that situation.
And if you do get the ball back, you know it's going to be going to have to drive.
You're going to be in worse shape.
Right. You're going to have to drive probably the length of the field with an offense that hasn't moved the ball at all. And so, yeah, and I will maybe slightly disagree with both of you on this. He did get 20, but he had back-to-back carries twice the entire game. They never once handed him the ball three straight times. The one drive they scored a touchdown on, which started, by the way, on the 16 of the Texans, so it's not really a drive, but that drive, he touched the ball the first four plays of it, once through the air, three times running it, and they end up with a touchdown. Like, I still don't think they gave him the ball enough, but particularly as you're talking about on that play that could keep the ball in their hands to potentially go win.
I mean, fourth down in overtime. And to me, it made me think back of 2016. And Nick, I said this in 2016 when they had home field advantage. I thought that was the Dallas Cowboys with Dak in his first season, with Tony Romo as a backup, Zeke having an outstanding season, offensive line intact. I thought that was their best opportunity to win a Super Bowl. And I think in 2016 said, well, how is that relevant to last night's game? In 2016, they would have ran Zeke on that fourth down.
Or at least have Dak Prescott, who's a big guy, let him sneak it in.
As a dual option quarterback, like, you did the Texans a favor by taking Dak and Zeke off the field. You're right, Jenna, a quarterback sneak. We saw other teams doing quarterback sneaks or coaches deciding. The Rams, Sean McVay.
They did what I've been begging teams to do for so long. We can win the game right here. We're up two, rather than wait, trust our defense, let's try to win the game right here. And by the way, The other aspect that has to go into this is Jason Garrett was watching the same game we were, which was our offense has not moved the ball the whole half. This was, the up to that point, the punt, the second-best drive they had going since halftime. The Cowboys, after halftime, here were the yards gained on their drives. 16, 2, 15, 13, 45, got them a field goal. 0, 0, then to overtime. They've already gotten 33 yards. They're actually moving the ball with a chance to take the lead or win in overtime.
And, Nick, one thing that had you upset was Dallas, say their first 15 plays, those are already scripted plays. That was drive number one, drive number two. They went up and down the field, making big plays in the running game and in the passing game to get them the 6-0 lead. After that, Jason Garrett, Scott Linehan, to your point, they didn't make many adjustments after that. So their most productive offense was those first two series of the game.
And they, I mean, there were just moments in the game, beginning of the drive that spanned from the very end of the third quarter to the beginning of the fourth. First play of the drive, Zeke gets 11. Second play of the drive, he gets 15, gets called back because of a holding call. But he's actually finally getting chunks. Never touches the ball again. They, on their opening drive, that did, they were moving the football, but they end up having to settle for a field goal. Third and two. They don't run Ezekiel Elliott. Third drive of the game, Zeke goes for 14 on the first play of the drive. Never touches the ball again. Like, Dak hasn't, the number was 200. I'm not going to up it to 230. Dak hadn't thrown for 230 in a half a season's worth of football. Like, you have to know, even yesterday, it's like, oh, what did Dak do? Oh, 208. So you have to know who your quarterback is, who you're playing, and the reason the overtime component matters here is if you go for it on that fourth down and you don't get it, okay, you are more likely to lose. But if you punt it, you're basically playing for a tie. So you're only risking that, like, half game as opposed to trying to go for the win.
All right, let's talk about Zeke for a second. Besides stuffing the box, how were they actually able to contain him? Give us the answer for all future teams going to be playing the Cowboys coming up.
Well, for one, the Texans, you got to give them credit. Their run defense was very, very good. When you have Clowney at the right defensive end, you had J.J. Watt playing the best football we've seen from the former defensive MVP multiple times. Best football he's playing. When you're playing against a one-dimensional Cowboys team, that's all they were doing was playing the run. They were hoping that they were going to pass the ball so that they could tee off on them. Dallas's offensive line. Also, it's not a great pass-blocking offensive line, and you don't think they're wide receivers. Like, who's the threat
from a
wide receiver standpoint? And back to the sequence for when they decided to punt. On third down, because they throw to Cole Beasley and get 8-9 yards to make it third and one. On third and one, they run an odd formation where they put Zeke at the fullback, put Cole Beasley at the tailback, and they run Zeke on a dive. Like, from creative standpoint, zero.
And what that is, tell me if I'm wrong, C, because I'm watching Dak after the play and I'm watching where Cole Beasley goes. It's like they wanted to trick the Texans into thinking they were running an option with Beasley.
Yeah.
Because watch, Beasley runs out like it's an option and Dak goes out like
it's an option.
Let me tell
you what the Texans were hoping. They were hoping that they pitched it to Cole Beasley. Okay? Like, that's not a, if you're telling me your whole season's on the line, the game's on the line, you're going to put Dak at fullback. So you take away his creativity, you know he's not going out on a pass. And then Cole Beasley, is he your most explosive player? Put Tavon Austin back there. And then potentially run the option with Dak. Like, that's something that I would like to see on that fourth down call compared to punting.
Here's the only way, in my eyes, that call is defensible. If you've made the decision we're going for it on fourth. On third, we're going to try to catch them off guard.
Absolutely.
We're going to do something different that we know we won't lose yards on because we're giving it to the damn fullback. We're basically doing a fullback dive, the play most guaranteed to go between 0 and 2 yards. Like, it doesn't go more than that, you're not going to lose yards.
Or if this is the old Dallas Cowboys and they're giving it to Moose Johnson.
Absolutely.
Because they're worried about Troy. They're worried about Emmett at the tailback.
Sure. But if you know you're going for it on fourth down. But what's going to be forgotten in this game is the Cowboys defense played a marvelous football game.
Yeah.
Jalen Smith was flying around like he was at Notre Dame again. Credit to Chris Collinsworth for making it a point of the broadcast because he keyed on it and he was right. This is the fewest points the Texans have scored in regulation in any game all season. They the Texans were 1 of 6 in the red zone, including 2 times they were inside the 5-yard line and were held to a total of 3 points. Like, the Cowboys defense played well enough to win. And once again, the offense, Scott Linehan, Jason Garrett, and Dak Prescott deprived them of a chance to win that game.
Which is what Dak Prescott said after the game. Our defense kept us in the game, mm-hmm. and we as offense lost it. What was the grade you gave to their creativity?
Zero.
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 Yeah, the Russian judge tried to give it a 1, but I snatched that one.
Coming up.
0 points. On a scale of 100.
Another NFC East team having some problems. Has Odell Beckham Jr.'s frustration with Eli and the Giants finally boiled over? That's next on First Things First. Moving on to Odell Beckham Jr. now, who had quite the Sunday both on and off the field. Before the game, he was critical of Eli and the Giants' play calling. In the game, he had his first touchdown of the year, a pass to Saquon Barkley, longest pass play for the Giants all season. Fourth quarter, he got his first touchdown catch. Eli to Odell, pulls the Giants within 3. Less than 2 minutes to go, Saquon scores on a 15-yard catch right there. So strong, just muscles away. And Giants up 1. And this was all but over, save for Graham Gano from 63 wow. yards out at the buzzer.
Wow.
Shot themselves. Panthers win 33-31. After the game, Giants head coach Pat Shurmur addressed the Odell situation.
Listen, I'm going to answer all the drama questions right now. And I'm going to go back to what I said. All right? I addressed it with Odell. I addressed it with our team. I publicly declared that I didn't agree with his comments. And I asked anybody that was interested, if they wanted clarification, go to Odell, because he's a big man. Now, I'm not going to give the public a pound of flesh on this, right? That would make me small, not strong. And these are the kind of things, in my opinion, when you have the locker room that we have, that will help galvanize them, because the locker room took care of it. And that's all I'm saying on it. Finito.
I'm trying to be a leader. This is a position that I've never been in. I'm trying to grow. I'm learning on the way, so I'm on the fly. But I'm proud of where we went today. We gave it all. We came against adversity, calls here and there. And, you know, we can never rely on the refs to win the game, but there was calls here and there that were questionable or this and that, and we kept fighting. And that's all I could ask for.
Nick, Pat Shurmur may not have given the public a pound of flesh. He may have given them a quarter pound or a half a pound right there. He was clearly perturbed about what Odell said before, to the point where it had to be a conversation. He made him talk to the locker room. What was your reaction to everything that happened with Odell yesterday?
Well, my reaction was nothing he said to Josina Anderson was inaccurate. Everything he said was accurate. And Odell would tell you, for people saying he needs to keep this in-house, aside from the Eli comments, those were things that had been kept in-house about wanting to be more creative, wanting to take more shots on offense, wanting to play with more passion. And it didn't take. He has a relationship with Josina. He's there with Lil Wayne. And he appeared to say things that a lot of people think and don't say out loud. He's asked about Eli Manning. In print, the question is Eli Manning part of the problem? And in print, you read, I don't know. If you watch the interview, he says, I don't know. I know Eli's not going to mobile guy. He's not going to get out of the pocket, and then talks about it. But everything he said is true. And I'm not saying one led to the other, but yesterday the Giants offense looked like it can look. It scored 30 points for the first time in 2.5 years. They didn't lose because of problems on offense. Now, Odell made 2 major errors. He had a drop on 4th down, and he had the more major error, the punt return, where he didn't get out of the way, and it goes off him. The Panthers score on the muffed punt. But he also played his best game with his biggest plays of the season. I don't think we can look at his comments and say they were a distraction to the Giants. They hurt the Giants yesterday. That's not why they lost. And I'm not overly shocked by his comments either.
Well, I would argue that this being his best game, for one, when you're as talented as him, there's a 4th down possession. They throw you the ball. You don't catch it. It's an easy catch, a very, very simple catch. So that's like a turnover. You touching the ball on the punt, where we've actually put you back as a punt returner, and we have other people that can do this, and you have one of the lowest return averages in the NFL, that's a turnover inside the opposition's 5-yard line. So to think that he was part of the winning. No, he wasn't. He was part of them losing that football game also. Nick talked about Odell's comments. They were the truth. Well, don't nobody care about the truth when you're in team sports. When you're sitting at home on the sofa and you're a fan and you got pom-poms, yeah, you can speak the truth. But when you're in team sports, you can't speak the truth. You know the New York Giants organization, with all the little things about Odell that he's been struggling with the last couple years, the Giants didn't tell us the truth about Odell. You know what they did? They protected the superstar. And that's the same thing that you have to do when you're sitting down. I don't care, Lil Wayne. Like, you don't work for Lil Wayne. You don't work with Joe Cena. You work for the New York Football Giant. And it was your opportunity to let people know that everything is okay. I don't care what the truth about Eli is. You can't tell the truth. I don't care what the truth about the Giants is. You can't tell the truth. The reason why, because it does not help the Giants win. I like what Odell said after the game. You know something? I'm learning this. He's learning how to be a leader. And sometimes you make mistakes. And that was a huge mistake. You do not go to your veteran players and expect them to make make your job more difficult. And Pat Shurmur said that this was handled in-house. That means probably someone like Snacks Harrison, after seeing the interview in the morning at the hotel, that they went up and talked to Odell and said something to him.
Night before. They addressed it the night before.
And that or the night before. It was leaked out. It would be on Twitter that this was going to be on there. So typically, guys on the team will say something. So Odell is a huge part of what they're doing. And he had an opportunity to be able to take care of Eli, take care of Pat Shurmur, take care of Dave Gettleman, because this team is not real, real talented. And take care of the team the same way the team, when they don't say everything that they know about you to be true. It's a partnership, all right? The organization's not going to say anything bad about you, and you're not supposed to be saying anything bad about the organization. It's not a matter of is it true. Of course, there's truth in every organization.
Well, meanwhile, with Odell playing these five games, the New York Giants are suddenly 1-4. Why are they in this situation?
Well, up until yesterday, you could say the offense's inability to score to go along with the defense's inability to force turnovers, to get to the quarterback, to stop the opposing offense. Yesterday, to me, it was about the offense did its job aside from a couple poorly, like it seemed for a moment there, like Cam and Eli were trading picks. Like Eli had a pick, then Cam had a pick, Eli had a pick. But yesterday, the turnovers, two by Eli, one by Odell, two of them led directly to touchdowns, and the defense didn't. The defense had opportunities. Now, with that said, Giants should have won this game. Like a 63. This is the second time. If I'm a Giants fan, I don't know what. This is the second time in a year they have lost on a 60-plus yarder. Remember the game against the Eagles last year? 61-yarder at the gun. And when they say the refs, I'm not blaming the refs. I understand their frustration. It wasn't just that McCaffrey was probably short of the first down that led to the field goal, but it was also a bunch of they get off the field on third down and there's illegal contact or there is a unnecessary roughness penalty on the safety. Like, there were some tough penalties, but they played well enough to win. Gonneau was, what's Gonneau, 5% likely to make that kick from 63? So I understand some of the frustration there.
Yeah, how can you be frustrated when your defense is that bad, though? I mean, the New York Football Giants, like, they teams are going up and down the field on them. Since early last season, their defense has not been good. So they're not really talented as we think. They have some names on paper, but who are their star players? Like, who are their front line, the best players they have? They don't have a style from an offensive standpoint because I didn't think they were going to be able to run the ball, even though they went out and got Nate Solder. I told people they're not going to be able to run the ball because he is not a power driver blocker, especially as far as the run game. So we think the New York Football Giants are talented because Odell Beckham's on the team, but when you look at the roster, they're not one of the most talented rosters in the NFL.
Real quick, your point on running the football, it just shows – just because you say you're going to do something doesn't mean you can do it. The Giants, they spend the money on Nate Solder. They draft a running back number two overall, and they still can't run the football. Like, the path to victory of the Giants this year was supposed to be a dominant running attack with big plays to Odell Beckham.
Yeah, it's the hardest thing to do in the NFL is the continuity of the running game. That's why only a few teams can do it and do it well week in and week out.
So Carolina now 3-1 thanks to the win. Thanks in mediocre part to Cam Newton. Time for Put a Grade on It, presented by CarMax. We'll stick with this game. Cam Newton threw for 237 yards, two touchdowns, two picks, and this big block that we showed you earlier. Panthers came away with a 33-31 win. There it is. Nick, put a grade on Cam's game.
Listen, I would give him a C+. However, Jenna Wolf texted me during the game and said, I'm sold on Cam now. So he finally won Jenna Wolf over. Great. So to me, he gets an A. Cam Newton gets an A. He won Jenna Wolf over. So I give him an A, Chris Carter.
It's hard to do.
Man, you guys are weird on this grading system and everything. I know you're supposed to be smart and everything, but, man, you're just giving out lobs and everything. Just giving out. Okay, I can go with that. Jenna's involved in Cam now, but Cam didn't play one of his great games. Cam, it's the intangibles. His team won that last drive doing all the right things. Yeah, I can
got on the winning bus. I threw that block. He won Jenna over. His post-game outfit was as good as it's been since the bathrobe.
My text was before the 37th lob turnovers back and forth.
Hey, Jenna, don't worry about the timing of it. Okay. You texted me. I'm sold on Cam.
Got to take a break.
I said, all right.
Coming up.
After the block.
Is the Eagles Super Bowl hangover here to stay? That's next on First Things First. Today, it's game 4 of the NLDS as the Dodgers look to close out the Braves. It all starts at 4 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app.
Guys, so the game yesterday, this was such a perfect moment in the game yesterday. So Walker Buehler, the Dodgers pitcher, can't find the strike zone. He walks the pitcher. The Braves are up 1-0. So he walks the pitcher, load the bases, and then he throws what looks like 4 straight balls to Acuña, the best player on the Braves, 20 years old, in a couple years probably the best player in baseball. Acuña doesn't get the call on the fourth, what should have been the fourth ball, way out of the strike zone, calls it a strike. So he's angry. He's got next pitch, grand slam. So Buehler thought he got away with it with one, ends up giving up a grand slam. Braves get up 5-0. Dodgers tied up. Braves steal, end up winning, I think, get the winning run in the sixth and hold on. So what looked like was going to be a sweep. Now Braves can force a game 5. Should be an awesome
just to make the most appropriate baseball comment ever. When Acuña steps back, when you thought it wasn't going to really be pitched, I saw his chain and I said to myself, that's a chain Nick Wright would like.
No, that's why you get always putting these non. No, that is not a chain Nick Wright would like.
That's
man.
A chain Nick Wright nah, would like. That's Acuña, what I said. Acuña. And then what did he do?
Hit the grand slam.
Grand slam. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a chain Nick Wright can afford. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that one right there, he can get 3 of them.
Time for us to go viral. Check out this cool moment from the NBA over the weekend. Warriors played a preseason game in Seattle. Remember, the Seattle Supersonics drafted KD in 2008 before the team moved to OKC. To pay homage, he wore Sonics legend Sean Kemp's jersey. What'd you think, Nick?
Seattle deserves a team. Yes. Seattle flatly deserves a team. At some point, I believe they will get a team back. What happened, the way Oklahoma City got their team was basically theft. The owners, we're not going to move the team. We're not going to move the team. They're emailing each other, can't wait to move the team.
5 minutes later.
And KD, I was at KD's last game ever as a Sonic in Seattle about a decade ago. And so he didn't want to leave Seattle. He was leading the chance Save Our Sonics back as a rookie.
Yeah,
that was
a
cool
great
moment.
Gesture. It was a great gesture. And if Kevin Durant hadn't have said some of the things, it would have been even more hyped up. It was nice by him to put on the Sean Kemp. Nice little touch.
Very cool.
All right, time now for stories to start your morning.
He needed to get in the weight room, though.
Man.
I thought he lost some weight since last season.
Antonio Brown and the Steelers offense rolling against the Falcons yesterday. AB finished with 6 catches, 101 yards, 2 touchdowns. Steelers win big, 41-17. See, how impressive was Pittsburgh's offense yesterday?
Oh, it was impressive. They got back on sync. AB, Ben. Ben had a sense of urgency going into the game. Ben was the one leading the charge, but AB played at the level that we have been expecting. So good job by Steelers in their overall passing attack.
And every year, there's at least one team whose hopes and dreams are dashed due to injury. We normally focus on the quarterback injury. We're like, it's Jimmy Garoppolo. Well, it's the Falcons this year. They cannot defend. They didn't need a great defense, but they were going to have an average defense. Lost 2 safeties, lost their middle linebacker. Like, everyone is going to move the ball on them. This was a good get-right game for Pittsburgh.
Moving on to the Packers and Lions, Mason Crosby, you talk about a tough day, missed 4 field goals and an extra point, left 13 points off the Packers' board. Green Bay loses 31-23. Nick, how much of this loss is on Crosby?
As much as can be on a kicker. Like, I mean, the only reason he didn't miss all his field goals is because they let him kick one with 2 seconds left when they were down 11. Like, let's see if you can do this. Yeah. He's one of, I would say, 3 or 4 maximum kickers in the league that could survive this. Because he's won a Super Bowl with them. You saw Rodgers going over to him and talking to him. Because he has such history there. 28 kickers would be unemployed this morning after that game yesterday.
And he's part of the storyline, but the Packers were bad the first half. Mm-hmm. Now, we know the kicker missed the kicks and everything, but this was a team that did not look motivated. Aaron Rodgers looked like he could have been other places out there. So, this is... Let's watch what's going on in Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers has the press conference last week. The kicker, I don't know what's going on with the kickers this year, but they're terrible this year.
They're terrible, man.
Moving on to the Broncos and Jets. Rookie Sam Darnold finished with 198 yards, 3 touchdowns, and an INT. Jets get the win 34-16. See, how impressive did Darnold look yesterday?
Oh, very impressive. Him and Robbie Anderson connecting. I got Robbie texting me. Oh, man, I'm trying to be patient. I'm working hard. I'm like, this NFL is supposed to be difficult.
And get back out on the field. Stop texting.
I got a relationship with him. I was like, yeah, now you're being patient. You got one touchdown. 20 minutes later, had to text him again. Robbie got another touchdown. Sam Darnold, I felt like, played his best game. Connecting on the deep throws. Attacking the defense down the football field. First time Jets have done that successfully all season.
And that's going to get the headlines. Isaiah Crowell was the best player on the field yesterday.
Man. Yes.
You told me he was a 5-star kid out of high school.
Absolutely.
I didn't know that.
Best high school running back.
You saw some real flashes from him yesterday. I think he had 219 yards. He was the best player yesterday.
All right, finally, Rams and Seahawks. Russell Wilson finally got the offense rolling, thrown for 3 touchdowns, but there was no stopping Todd Gurley, who had 3 scores on the ground himself. Jared Goff converts the big 4th-and-1 late in the game, and the Rams stay undefeated on the season. Here's Rams head coach Sean McVay after a big win on the road.
It was just one of those games. You knew it was going to be come down to the wire, and just try to give my team some energy, man, offense, defense. Defense was upset, but just told them we got their back. You know, we all in this together. It's not going to be a blowout win or whatever, so... it was just one of those fun games.
I guess the longer you play the game, the more different you end up looking. Sean McVay looks just like Todd Gurley right now, who had an absolutely
incredible game. Sean McVay's so impressive.
Game.
He got dreads in his
dreads and everything.
He's trying to blend in.
And he's doing a great job. It almost looks like Todd Gurley. What do you think, C? Have the Rams cemented themselves as the best team in the NFL at this point?
They're definitely the best team in the NFL because of their balance, their defense. Came up with big stops when they had to. The thing about the Rams was you're going to have games like this game. But teams that are not good teams, they end up losing this game. A divisional game. Last year, the Rams embarrassed Seattle. So Seattle went into this game with a little more motivation. Seattle played a good football game, played well enough to be able to win. But the Rams, their offensive firepower, even being without two of their top receivers, Brandon Cook knocked out of the game. Kupp knocked out of the game. So him using his backup players, you could see how good Jared Goff is in his third year as the starting quarterback there. Sean McVay, though, being aggressive at the end, that's what wins this game. So I don't mind a team struggling. You know, so sometimes you still have to be able to win these games, especially divisional games on the road. We know Seattle's very, very tough at home. So I thought this was a good win for the Rams.
It's a good win for the Rams. The Seahawks were 7.5-point dogs at home. The last time that happened was the Beastquake game, the playoff game against the Saints that they won with Marshawn Lynch before Russell Wilson got there. So we're not used to seeing Seattle as heavy home underdogs. And the Rams, while they didn't cover, they were able to win. This was an expensive game for them, though. I mean, as far as you had Cooks, like you mentioned, he got hit hard. Kupp left with an injury. And you saw little cracks in the defensive armor.
Yes.
Still no Aqib Talib. But the pass defense, while Russell Wilson had a 132 rating, what really concerned me was the run defense. Seattle ran the ball 32 times for 190 yards. 190 yards on the ground. So I think they're the best team in the league. But they are, to me, that the gap between them and Kansas City shortened this weekend with what Kansas City did and what the Rams did. If we're talking about the best team in each conference.
Well, I just think the secondary. And Marcus Peters, he guessed a couple times in this game, got beat deep. Mm-hmm. We know they're getting Talib back later on in the season. So you have to be able to bake that into the equation. You think they're better on the back end than Kansas City is.
It's like what you guys say. They needed a game like this. They needed a game to be tested, to have to actually challenge themselves, to overcome, to be on the road. It was a good win for them.
Well, it's first game out of the state of California. And we mentioned it earlier. I want to mention it again, though, because he deserves a ton of credit. 4th-and-1. with the game on the line, he brings the Sean McVay calls his punt team out there. Pete Carroll calls timeout. McVay has a minute to think about it. He's like, you know what? We're only up two. If we allow a field goal, we lose. Let's just go try to win this game right now. Jared Goff, QB sneak. Seattle never touches the ball again. That's an excellent play call. Even if it doesn't work, it's the right play call. Credit to him.
So the anti-Jason Garrett
yes,
play call.
Yes, absolutely
yesterday.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right, moving on to the Vikings and Eagles, also known as my only 4 o'clock plans yesterday. All Minnesota at the start of this one. Kirk Cousins finds Adam Thielen, and the Vikings take a 17-3 halftime lead. Eagles trying to make a comeback. Carson Wentz to Zach Ertz for the touchdown to pull within two with a minute left. Eagles with the onside kick. But Thielen makes the recovery because what can't Thielen do? Eagles fall to 2-3 on the season. Vikings get the revenge win. Here is Vikings quarterback Kirk Cousins.
I think we found a way. Wasn't perfect, certainly. I was pleased with the fact that we kept trying to answer, and credit to Coach Flip for being aggressive as a play caller, making sure that he gave us opportunities to answer, and then players had to go make plays.
We got to take a real hard look in the mirror. Little mistakes like that, kind of the same thing I really echoed last week after the game. These little mistakes that sometimes can go overlooked are just killing us, and we're playing like we're a young rookie team, and we're not. And so we got to really be hard on ourselves and learn from these mistakes and turn it around fast.
CeCe, tell me if I'm wrong here. Anytime I hear a player say we have to take a look in the mirror, they're having an identity problem. Like, who are we really? What's our specialty? What is our strength? This is a team that won the Super Bowl that should know exactly what they have coming into this year. How concerned should the defending champion Eagles be after falling to 2-3 now?
I'm concerned because also what the players and the coaches have been saying in the press conferences. The quarterback lets you know that I need to take a look at myself, because the last time he was the starting quarterback, they were a different football team. Because you do have to realize that as much as Philadelphia fans want to applaud their franchise quarterback, he didn't win with them last year. So now, they did that all alone. Like, he was a cheerleader. So now they come back, and all offseason, what do we hear? Oh, man, New England, people don't want to play up there. They don't have fun and everything. We have more fun. How much fun you having now? That's what I want to ask Lane Johnson. How much fun you having? Like, you're not the best right tackle in pro football. You sat right here and said it. Took up all the space and everything. Right here, big fella. You said, I'm the best tackle in football. Him, Jason Peters. Jason Peters struggling with injuries. He's in and out the game. So that offensive line that was a dominant force, they're no dominant force. They can't run the ball. They got fumbling problems as far as their running back. They don't have a featured running back. They are missing LeGarrette Blount, that big hammer that they had last year. There's no dependable big plays in the passing game outside of Zach Ertz. So, yes, I'm concerned about who they're going to be, how they're going to move forward. And my biggest concern happens to be on that offensive line.
Who are the Philadelphia Eagles? That's the question right now. We know who they were last year. You kept saying it, and I love it. Their big people are better than your big people.
Yes.
They weren't yesterday. They weren't last week either.
Mm-hmm.
They've played 5 games this year. It's not just that they're 2-3. It's that their 2 wins weren't decisive. Last year they had 7 decisive victories. We know the majority of NFL games come down to the fourth quarter, usually one possession games. Last year, 7 times, didn't come down to the fourth quarter, didn't come down to one possession. They beat the brakes off teams. Even their wins, Atlanta has a chance to win the game at the end. Indy, you need a drive at the end of the game to beat Indianapolis. And then Indy drives right back on you with a chance to win. You know why I'm also concerned? I watched how Tennessee moved the ball on you last week.
Yes.
And then I watched Tennessee yesterday.
Same team.
Lose to Buffalo and not score a touchdown. Like, I mean,
in Buffalo's defense, they did beat the Vikings also.
Absolutely. But I saw Tennessee, the one time this year their offense has had a real pulse was against the Eagles. The Eagles' offensive line gave up 8 tackles in the backfield, whether that's sacks or tackle TFLs. Like, their defensive line generates 1 sack. Their secondary is highly problematic. Like, the DL, at least, the defensive line, I get it. Timmy Jernigan's injured. Haloti Ngata wasn't there. Like, and I think they will be better. Michael Bennett made a big play, got a tough call on him. I understand that part of it. But the secondary, help ain't on the way. And who are you right now as the Philadelphia Eagles?
Something you said that was really interesting. This is a team that I think truly believes they won last year because they were having fun, because they were the anti-Patriots, because they felt they had a new system, a new formula to how they were going to approach football. Well, things have changed now. So if you're Doug Peterson and you're not having fun, what's the message so this thing doesn't get way out of control at this point in this season?
That's the one thing we have to put respect to. Doug Peterson's learning, too, as a head coach. Like, we can't act as if he's got 10 years experience. We had Coach Mangini on the show. Mangini talked about New England. When did they struggle? After they won their first championship. That next season, right?
Right, they missed the playoffs.
They missed the playoffs. Now, that's real. And he said at that time, they didn't know. They didn't know that something happens after the Super Bowl. And they tried to prevent it. They did everything. And even they struggled with their success. This is what we've seen in the NFL. Teams that are successful, everyone except New England, if they win, which is very, very rare, we see them struggle that next year. The schedule's tougher. They play more primetime games.
Spotlight's
and people are gunning for them. And they don't have the magic that they had last year. The underdog thing, it did work for them. Maybe they need to break out the mask and everything, because this team is totally different than the team we saw host the Lombardi Trophy in Minneapolis.
And what about the Vikings now? Are they back on track after a pretty commanding win yesterday?
They still can't run the ball.
No.
Like, that is the yesterday, 23 for 77. I know Dalvin Cook didn't play, but up to this point in the year, he hasn't been playing well anyway. Right now, they are Kirk Cousins, and what was most encouraging for the Vikings yesterday, I thought, was the defense at least somewhat starting to round into form. But let me rephrase. The really most encouraging thing for the Vikings is they won. They had to win. They had one win going into that game. Mm-hmm. Now Zimmer, he was doing the whole, we were 2-2 this year, 2-2, 2-2. Now he can credibly tell the team, guys,
that's a good win.
We're at 500. We went on the road against the defending Super Bowl champs, and we found not only won, but we're up double digits inside a minute. Like, the Eagles got a touchdown at the end to make it look closer than it was at the end.
They need to keep an eye on Chicago. We saw Green Bay struggling yesterday in Detroit. That struggle will continue. But Chicago, they have a bye, and then they have the AFC East lined up. They got all four teams from the AFC East. So, are they going to go 3-1 in that? They got New England in there. Are they going to go 3-1 in that? Do we think they're going to split? Nick probably thinks they're going to go 3-1 in that stretch. So you got to keep an eye on Chicago. They can run out and get 8-9 wins fairly quick.
It's a great point. The next quarter of their season is all AFC East games. The road ones are Miami and Buffalo. The home ones are New England and the Jets. If you start 3-1, and the next quarter you go 3-1 again, now you're at 6-2. And even if Minnesota in that stretch goes four, even if they go 3-0 the rest to even up at eight games, they still have a worse record than you. Even if they go 4-0, they have a worse record.
Yeah, puts the pressure on the Vikings. They'd have to sweep the Bears.
Absolutely.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, don't tell the Rams, but the Chiefs might actually be the best team in the league. That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we're now joined by former Pro Bowl linebacker, man with big takes, Bart Scott. Hey, Bart, good morning.
What up?
Good How's to see it going? You, Bart.
I thought we broke up. Thanks for having me back.
Wow. You two disagree.
Good to see you.
I'm like Champ, invitation. You know what I mean?
I told Brian to call you. He butt-dialed you. Booty call. Let's go, Bart. Let's do this.
Let's do it.
All right, let's talk about that AFC showdown.
Butt-dial and booty call. Very different things, see?
Yeah, it is. Jags and Chiefs.
Tell them, Nick, what I meant.
Patrick Mahomes, still good, rushes in for the early score to go up 7-0, but also quite human. His first interception of the season. He finished with two on the day, 22 of 38 for 313 yards. No passing touchdowns, but not to be outdone. Blake Bortles, Bart, throws a doozy as Chris Jones takes it in for the pick six. Hold on, because Bortles, with four interceptions on the day, he's great at interceptions. Chiefs remain undefeated. Bart, we'll start with you. How impressive was the Chiefs' win, despite what some would call a pedestrian game from Pat Mahomes?
I mean, I love it because the same thing make you laugh, make you cry. So, you know, Jalen Ramsey is essentially called out the entire NFL. And then when Hill came out and made his comments, now he's in his feelings. But that's what happens when you do that type of player. It's always somebody that's got their sights on you. And I thought yesterday that, you know, Hill, you know, it's so much team speed. And everybody in the AFC is so flawed. you know, where Kansas City has great offense, bad defense, but their defense showed up, and people don't realize how hard it is to play an Arrowhead. I mean, I think they're the only very few teams that still have a band going live. You smell barbecue and dry rub all over the place, and they play with so much emotion. It's almost like a college atmosphere. Yep. Yep. So they walked into a buzzsaw. Then Blake Bortles, they need Blake Bortles to play mistake-free football and also be able to, you know, deliver and score in the red zone, and instead he turned back to Blake Bortles. You know, he turned back into a pumpkin. And that's what Blake Bortles always does. And that's my biggest concern with this Jacksonville Jaguars team is now that, you know, because you're so brash, you're going to get every team's best. But they ran into a buzzsaw. You gave Andy Reid, and I think what they saw was a team speed on a slow surface where they can continue to be fast on a slow grass surface. You know, you can't be fast as a defense because you don't know where all the holes in the potholes are and all the sprinkler systems.
Oh, that's a great point as far as their speed, because given the weather, and Nick had an extensive weather report last week. He did a little Al Roker for us, getting us ready. Let us know it was going to be raining, for the most part, throughout the game. And you talk about that surface, Kansas City. It's not one of the better surfaces, and typically it would negate some of the speed. But this was almost like a playoff game. We're going to be late in December, January.
Yeah.
Man, it's going to be potholes on the field, lumps of grass.
Painted grass.
And they're still very, very fast. And you need to be able to win when your quarterback's not spectacular. And that's what the Chiefs were able to do yesterday. I was watching the game with Nick and everything. I told Nick, this is great. He threw a second interception. Nick was like, ah. I was like, no, that's great. Because the rest of the team is generating confidence. So you start to really – their secondary started playing better. Right. They still rushed the passer, even though they had a couple guys that were not available at the end of the game. D Ford and another one, their defensive line.
They got a guy kicked out. Chris Jones got kicked out of the game. I did Alan Bailey, I think. They had two players ejected. D Ford got hurt, and they were still hitting Blake Bortles up the side of his head. Like, Bortles – the pick we didn't show there, not the pick six, but the pick Bortles where they were about to score, where he threw it directly into his own offensive lineman's helmet. It should have been an illegal touching by the offensive lineman, but I don't know if I've...
From hitting in the helmet?
But it is technically because he's the first guy to touch it. But the Bortles was awful. The Chiefs defense deserves some of the credit, and Blake Bortles deserves most of the blame there. But here's what is encouraging for the Chiefs and confusing for the Jags. Chiefs 30 carries for $126 against that defense. Yannick Ngakoue, Calais Campbell. I said before the game, I thought Mitchell Schwartz might be able to neutralize Calais Campbell. This back-to-back week, Mitchell Schwartz has dealt with Von Miller and Calais Campbell and acquitted himself quite well. But if you're the Jags and you, like NBA guys at the press conference, are always looking at the box score.
Yeah.
NFL guys don't do this, but I assume in the locker room or at some point they do look at a box score. You got to say, hold up. We ran for 101 on 17 carries?
Yeah.
What? And we let Bortles throw the ball 61 times. Like, they were gashing the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And I understand the game got away from them. But one of the reasons the game got away from them was because of the Bortles mistakes, the five Blake Bortles turnovers. So this was a great win for Kansas City because they're now three games up on the Jags.
Right.
Because they're two games and a head-to-head tiebreaker. It was a critical win and a dominating win without Mahomes being good.
And we've seen it. Bart, you've been on a part of some teams that their dominant defense can carry them, carry them to an AFC championship game, can carry them to a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. But I haven't seen, in the modern era, a team win a Super Bowl with Blake Bortles, okay? Trent Dilfer, much respect to my friend, is not Blake Bortles.
Game has changed.
All right? Brad Johnson was not Blake Bortles. And with now being so dependent on the passing game, Jacksonville as a franchise, they have made a critical mistake this offseason not trying to upgrade their quarterback and trying to rely on that defense in this era where they throw the ball too effectively.
I mean, because I always, at the beginning of the season, I said they should have been one of the people in the contention for
Bridgewater?
Yeah, for Bridgewater.
Yes.
You know, I mean, because, you know, even in the offseason, you should have went out for Eli Manning. You know, I thought they had an opportunity to upgrade the position. They bought in, you know, long-term because what he did in the playoffs. But the thing is, you can't trust them. And, you know, we talk about playing in tight games. What I can have my quarterback do is provide, you know, extra possessions, five extra possessions for a team that is so explosive and that, you know, you only can ask your defense to hold on for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you got speed all over the place. Tyreek Hill, you talk about, you know, Travis Kelce. Everybody's getting loose. And then what happens is you start getting killed by secondary pieces. You know, so
Sammy Watkins came back.
Absolutely.
Sorry, you know,
smack Ramsey's mouthpiece out of his mouth.
Yeah.
You know, it's never in his mouth, but he got it out. out of there. And they, you know what, they weren't bullied and they weren't intimidated by the moment because they have extreme confidence. Now you have to put an asterisk around the win because no Leonard Fournette changes that game even more because now you can stay more committed to the game. You'll get more explosive runs. Mm. But, you know, whenever you have a running back, you know, that can get to a top speed and he has hamstring problems, those hamstrings linger the entire year, especially. Now, he is better because he's playing in a hot, you know, hot place. He's playing in Jacksonville. But whenever they have to leave in December, November, you know, those hamstrings tend to tighten up. He's going to be on the bike. He's going to have a heating pad on, you know, and that's something to be, you know, something to watch.
For the second straight year, and I said it last year and people laughed, for the second straight year, the Jacksonville Jaguars are a quarterback injury away from being a contender. That's all they need. They're a
Who's the backup? Henny's gone, right?
Right now, the backup, oh, we looked it up this morning. Cody Kessler.
That ain't great.
I understand Cody Kessler ain't great, but I do know this, and I'm not going to go third rail on it. I'm just going to mention it.
I do know that
they had people campaigning for Colin Kaepernick to be brought in last
year. People had talked to the head coach. Cap was ready to go.
And the head coach wasn't opposed to it. And Tom Coughlin put the kibosh on it. Okay. Yep. All right, enjoy Blake Bortles. And then Cody Kessler, evidently. Enjoy that.
Careful what you wish for, because now they have high expectations, and eventually they're going to have to cash that lottery ticket in, because you think about how much money they have spent. They haven't even addressed Ramsey's contract. They haven't had to address Fournette's contract. So this is their window. They have two or three, maybe three more years, because you think about $100 million, you know, Calais Campbell. You think about Malik Jackson. You think about
A.J. Bouye.
Yeah, A.J. Bouye. You know, you only can continue to keep that before you have to recirculate the funds.
Didn't give Cap a look. Now the whole offense in a protest. Whole offense sitting there.
I like that seat.
Chiefs now undefeated. Who's the only quarterback left, starting quarterback, that hasn't thrown an interception?
I don't know.
It is Drew Brees. The only
Drew
one left.
Drew Brees.
He ain't played yet this week. That ain't fair.
How did the Texans shut down Ezekiel Elliott? That's next up.
Oh, my gosh.
Bart Scott. Bart, there was a battle for bragging rights down to Texas. Cowboys at Texans. Pick this up in overtime, 3rd and 1. Zeke gets stuck for no gain. Jason Garrett says, hey, we're going to punt. And that decision would cost him as Deshaun Watson finds DeAndre Hopkins for the 49-yard gain.
Pulling like a loaf of bread, CC.
Sit.
Yeah, he got huge hands, though.
Okay. Play that sets up the Kaimi Fairburn 36-yard field goal and the Houston Texans are your winners. Dallas and Houston now both sit at 2-3. Here's Deshaun Watson after the win.
He's a playmaker. He's one of the best, if not the best receiver in the NFL. So we rely on him. In those situations, he came up big. And playmakers make plays whenever, you know, we need them. And that was a situation where we needed to make a play. And, you know, I threw it up for him to make a play. And he did what he had to do.
A lot of people, you know, put him in a box sometimes and think that he's just a running quarterback. But you see the amazing throw that he made at the end. You know, that was an unbelievable throw to put touch on the ball like that. Just seeing how the defender undercut the pass, you know, great ball.
Obviously, it's frustrating. You lose your third road game straight for the most part. I mean, and then, as you said, it's the offense hadn't gotten going on the road, and defense, especially with them giving us all the chance they did, making the big plays down there in the red zone, holding them to field goals, and keeping us in the game, and we weren't doing our part. It's very frustrating.
Bart, all the talk all week was that the Dallas Cowboys, no matter what the Texans were going to bring, they had to just run the ball. Give the ball to Zeke. He's their only real great player on the team. Let him go out and win or lose the game for you. They sort of did that with 20 carries, but what was the key to the Texans beating the Cowboys Sunday?
See, I know Merciless, Clowney, Watt gets a lot of the attention, but those defensive tackles put on a show. You talk about penetration. You talk about winning the line of scrimmage. You know, Dallas wanted to pull those, you know, front side pullers, backside pullers. If you weren't covered, pull them, get Zeke to the edge. They were getting picked off because of inside penetration. And, you know, hats off to Reeder and Blackston because they put on the show and they were consistent the entire game. And Zeke just couldn't get started. He really couldn't. You know, you can set the edge from inside if you get penetration. And Collins, man, is taking L's on top of L's on top of L's. Mm-hmm. They're missing Frederick. And I think they're, you know, Zeke, what can you do? You know, when you're losing a point of attack and now you got to try and wind back and get to the edge and circle the defense.
What I will say is this. What they could have done is that 4th-and-1. Up to that, up in the second half, They had 7 drives.
Yeah, they could have salvaged.
They generated
a poor offensive night.
91 total yards of offense on 7 drives in the second half, leading up to overtime. In overtime, they actually started to move the ball. 33 yards is what they'd gotten after just that drive on overtime after 91 yards in the second half. I'll tell you, here's an interesting quote. I just pulled it up. And I went to an interesting place for the quote.
What's your
quote? DallasCowboys.com. So this was not to just, you know, some random media member. This was to the team's website, the team's reporter. Quote, we were being outplayed. It's time for risks at that particular time. Mm. That quote is from
Scott Linehan,
the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, Jerry Jones, to the website he owns, DallasCowboys.com, saying the coach that I pay should have gone for it there. So it's not me second-guessing. It's the only person really that matters second-guessing because it was 4th-and-1 at the Texans 42. Let's keep in mind, the Panthers in that situation kicked a game-winning field goal from 6 yards further back. Like, the Cowboys were afraid to run the ball on 4th-and-1. And I was certain they were going to go for it because of the goofy play they ran on 3rd down.
Bart, they ran an offset eye. They put Zeke at the fullback, ran a dive to him.
Yeah.
And you know something? Just to make sure the defense was terrified, we put Cole Beasley. Now, I don't know when the last time Cole Beasley lined up at tailback.
He's just there to cut.
But I know he's not there to do anything but for the defense to concentrate on Zeke. You cannot put Zeke in that. Now, Zach Martin, the right guard, he doesn't get a good block. He doesn't fire off and get the inside linebacker. He's late on that. But on 3rd down, only thing worse than them not going for it on 4th down was the call and the lack of creativity, which I rated being a 0 on a scale of 1 to 100.
I see, and I actually think it
wasn't that bad of a play because what it is remember the old.
Don't you coach your son's little league football team?
Yeah, I did. We took an L yesterday.
But okay, do you run that play, Bart? Tell the truth. You run fullback dive, Bart.
But you know what that is.
Do you run fullback dive? Answer the question, sir.
It's in the repertoire.
Okay.
Let me explain to the viewers really what that play is. That's pretty much a quarterback sneak with the fullback, which is your tailback. And what they do is you try and get the double team, and it's a trap. So you try and get them to run to the bubble. Remember the Seahawks used to run that play. And also the
Bart, you're getting too technical for me.
Well, the fullback that Aaron Rodgers used to have, Coon?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was his play, too. And
him
also,
or Moose Johnson.
Yeah, so also that was the dive pitch option type of option.
Right.
So Dak had the option to pull it out of the belly and then have the speed option.
What about Tavon Austin? Put a guy with some speed.
Instead of Cole Beasley.
Yeah. Well, you can't trust him. He had made a play in his life.
Okay, that play is going to get you, it's one of 3 outcomes.
Well, that was creative.
0 yards, 1 yard, or 2 yards.
Yeah.
Like, the only way you can justify doing that, to me, is if you've made the decision we're going for it on 4th.
Trizzle.
So if it's you run a play that you know you can't lose yards on because you're not going all the way in the backfield, you think maybe we can pick it up. If we don't pick it up, we'll probably pick up half the distance and then go for it.
What about the owner who 2 weeks ago said, my quarterback is a cross between Jared Goff and throw him. Cam Newton. So where's that guy at?
So that's Troy Smith, right?
Well,
your boy. No, I love Troy.
The point being, why not let him try to sneak it?
Oh, I got to apologize to a former team. My bad, Troy. I'm just playing, man. I'm just having fun with season.
Not.
But like,
he had a great career in the Canadian League.
This year, unbelievable.
Stay focused.
Okay.
Jared, Sean McVay, who knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Yes. Jared Goff, who is not as physically imposing as Dak, in a game they were winning to run a quarterback sneak. The Dallas Cowboys don't trust Zeke to run a typical run play. We got to trick him. Mm-hmm. We got to do some goofy, put him at fullback. You can say it's a fine play. What I know is this. It's the type of play you run if you think we can't just beat you. We can't win. We got approximately, let me check my notes.
I told you it was $1.2 billion
in the offensive line. You got the best running back in football straight running. We can't just run a regular handoff to him. And then we got to have the option to pitch it to Cole Beasley. And then you punt it on 4th down. Which, what's your best case scenario on punting on fourth down? You get it back with 3 minutes left in overtime, trying to drive the field.
2.5 minutes.
Right. You hadn't done that all game.
When you hadn't done it, their one touchdown drive came after the nuke fumble when they only had 16 yards to go. This, because you mentioned, Bart, the Texans' tackles deserve credit.
Yeah.
The Cowboys' defense deserves credit.
Yeah.
The Texans Kept had the ball. They ran 9 plays inside the 5-yard line, came away with 3 points. Yeah. They were in the red zone 6 times. They scored 1 touchdown. The Cowboys' defense, Jalen Smith, was
right
flying
now,
around. And they can't get to 17 points in regulation. Yeah. Not 17
points. I can't allow you to get away with the John Kuhn thing. The reason why the John Kuhn thing worked, because didn't nobody think he was going to get it. I mean, the element of surprise was they're not going to give it to him.
Same with the Moose Johnson thing, because you have Emmett
if
there.
If they would have had Cole Beasley at fullback and given it to him, I'd have been like, okay. All right, I understand.
I'm surprised.
I get you. Well, that was a great play. You know, they blitzed a gap, and it's always a bubble somewhere. They blitzed a gap and got penetration. You know, so. Yeah,
but I guess my question is this real quick, and I'm sorry.
Bart Strong.
When you
wine,
if you're on defense, let me ask you this. As your
Merlot, don't be hating.
As a defensive player, if you see Zeke Elliott lining up at fullback and Cole Beasley at tailback, and you're right before the snap, you got to guess. What are they doing on this play? What are you guessing?
Well, I get it, but the dive pitch is really a short yardage play. We all know what the dive pitch is, you know, when you fake and you pitch it. We've all run that play, and they got too cute. You know, you could say they got too cute, but if it works, then they're geniuses, because what happens is you got wedge blocking. You know, so really, you got two options. You want to go straight ahead because you know penetration is coming, and that holds that, you know, Cole Beasley being a tailback holds the defensive end from being able to flatten down. But what they didn't account for is they blitzing through the A-gap. Man, I feel this heat coming on. I'm so this heat.
Cole Beasley's mama was surprised he's a tailback. She's like, he's not getting the ball. You're not fooling anybody.
Bart, we'll see you in a little bit.
Marlo.
Coming up, did the Steelers.
Marlo, baby.
Like Stanfield.
Or Raspberry,
the
baby.
Fix their drama with an offensive explosion Sunday next on First Things First. On to the Steelers. Storyline coming in. Big Ben and Antonio Brown getting on the same page. Clearly no longer an issue. Taking on the Falcons. The two connected for 2 touchdowns. Over 100 yards. Pittsburgh blows out Atlanta 41-17. AB talked about his connection with Big Ben after the game.
We always on the same page. We always positive. We never listen to what the media say. We know we got to stay together regardless of what's being said. All of my touchdowns, all of my catches is from him. And that's my guy. I live and die with him. And the Wi-Fi was lit.
Okay, I have to just pause. That's adorable. What a little
man.
Yeah,
kids out there. I like it when guys bring their kids out there after a good game. I'm not going to lie. When you bring your kids out there after a bad game,
shield.
I feel like it's armor.
Yeah, it is.
Like,
it's
hey,
a
don't
shield.
You be grilling me. I got this little cutie pie on my lap. But after a good game, I got no problem.
No, you should only bring kids out if the game went well. You can't bring them out there because you still have a job to do, and that's answering the questions.
Absolutely.
I'm going to bring my daughter out onto the show every time I come off a show. Moving on. Can anyone slow down the Steelers?
Moving on, ain't even started the segment yet. All right, can anybody slow down the Steelers is the question. This is what the Steelers look like with Le'Veon Bell. Oh, we got a running back that's gashing him, and he's having success through the air.
Yeah.
Oh, we can't just double AB the whole game. Oh, look. Now, it helps, of course, they're playing a Falcons team that has been decimated by injury.
Of course. Sure, they had nothing there.
I get that part of it. And probably the bigger story is how the Steelers' defense held down a Falcons offense that had been moving the ball on everybody. Because while the Falcons went into this game 1-3, they could have been 4-0. They were they were 2 plays and a coin flip away from winning all those games. This is the first game they got truly beat down in. But the Steelers offense looked fully functional. They did it without James Washington having a big game, without Vance McDonald having a big game.
Mm-hmm.
AB, James Conner, and Juju had big games receiving. James Conner had his best game rushing since week 1, and that offense looked outstanding.
Yeah, and the defense was able to hold that Falcons offense, who had Freeman coming back to join them. So we thought the Falcons would continue that tremendous productivity. Their inability
to make big plays yesterday was the difference, I thought, in the game for the Falcons. What they've been able to do thus far, Julio Jones being double-teamed, when he wasn't able to have the big game, we saw Calvin Ridley being able to, their ability to keep it balanced with their running attack. Freeman being out since week number one, they've still been able to run the ball effectively. But this Steelers defense that struggled outside of the one big pass play to Mohamed Sanu and one big run by Freeman, they pretty much kept the Falcons in check.
And listen, Cam Hayward, he came out with those comments before the game. He had an excellent game. He had a sack and a half, had a tackle for a loss. He was dominating his matchup. T.J. Watt, second time this year, he's had three sacks. He had an outstanding football game. So the defense, I don't think the secondary is going to be good, but if they get that type of pass rush, then all of a sudden, and if they play like that at home, then they look more like the team I thought they could.
One thing that you could really see the difference in Pittsburgh was on third down. You know, converting 75% of those third downs, you could see being in sync. And you could also see on the big touchdowns that AB had, one time being double covered, the other time safety coming over late, you could see them being in sync in the passing game the way that we're used to and the way that they're prolific year after year.
First time we've seen a complete game, both sides of the ball, from this Pittsburgh Steelers team. Are we assuming that with a 1-4 record and a rash of injuries on defense, the Falcons are all but done this season?
And we think that that's probably the toughest division in football. We believe Tampa is going to be able to continue having some type of success with Jameis coming back, taking over the lead there. And we know New Orleans, who happens to play tonight, and Carolina with the win over the Giants yesterday, we know that they'll both be fighting for a playoff spot. So it's a tough year for the Falcons. Never in the NFL do you blame it on injuries, because we've seen teams year after year overcome injuries, but I can mention it for them. It's hard to overcome the defensive losses that they've had.
It's over for the Falcons. It's unfortunate. This is a team a lot of people thought could build on what they had last year if they just got the red zone stuff taken care of. They appear to have the red zone stuff taken care of, and the injuries have ruined them. For the optimism for the Steelers rests on this. There's been two games this year that their backup running back has had Le'Veon Bell-style production. The first game of the year that they were able to get a tie despite six turnovers, and yesterday when they dominate the Falcons. When the Steelers have a balanced offense, they are very tough to beat.
Yes.
And so now they only have one more game, assuming Le'Veon was not lying to Jeremy Fowler. They only have one more game without him, because they play next week and they have a bye. If he comes back and once he gets fully functional, then all of a sudden you say, oh, that the Steelers could still be a danger in the AFC.
And what's their schedule in the next?
Well, next week, they have a bye after next week.
Right.
But next week, they have Cincinnati. Oh, that's a huge game.
That's going to be a big
three
game.
And 4-1 Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah. Why couldn't L. Bell come back for that big rivalry game?
Go ahead and get paid on your day off, the bye week, and then come back. That's what he's got planned. That's what he's got planned.
Listen, so we think.
Career success.
What coming up, who's to blame for the Packers' loss on Sunday? Wait till you hear next on First Things First. First things first, we are going viral. The Red River Showdown between Oklahoma and Texas lived up to the hype. The Longhorns were up by 21 points entering the fourth quarter. I thought this was all but over. Sooners made a furious comeback to even the game. Take a listen to our Gus Johnson on the final play.
Oh, yeah. A child shall lead. Cameron Dicker from 40 yards away for University of Texas Red River Immortality. Earthquake! He hit it! Dicker! The kicker!
Thank the Lord for people like Gus Johnson, blessing us with the call.
Ah, it's fantastic.
That's why Gus is the greatest. Our friend Joel Klatt, I really think, is the best college football color guy. And he gets overshadowed at times because Gus is out there.
What are you going to say after? The child shall lead.
Child shall lead. University of Texas. Red River Shootout.
Yeah.
Immortality.
But then to cap it with Dicker, the kicker. It was perfect.
I'm going to pull the curtain back a little bit. Gus's and Joel's spotter is a guy named Scotty. He goes with them all the games, does a great job. I know Scotty a little bit. We had a drink with him when we were in Ohio for the game. And
Scotty is Gus's man.
Scotty's Gus's guy. And I just know during the break, I'm guessing, I don't know, that Scotty was like, you going to do the line? You going to do the line if he hits the kick? You got to do the line. You going to do the line?
I'm going to do it.
You're going to do it? You sure you're going to do it?
Yeah, I'm going to shoot.
And then while he's getting him, I'm going to stand up real quick. There's another thing that's known to happen. CeCe's Gus. Scotty's out here. Do it, Gus. Do it, Gus.
Dicker. Do it. The kicker.
And so Scotty doesn't get a lot of cred because he's behind the scenes, but he's part of the magic that happens there.
That's awesome.
That was a great game and a great call.
Yeah, that's awesome. A way to get a couple free licks in on me, too.
We'll run that segment back at 9:15.
Well, good for Tom Herman.
9:15, I'll be hitting back.
Time for stories to start your morning. Big AFC showdown. Jags and Chiefs. Patty Mahomes rushing for a touchdown. Also threw two interceptions. Chiefs win 30-14. They remain undefeated on the year. Nick, how impressive was the Chiefs win despite a pretty pedestrian game from Pat Mahomes?
Oh, it was impressive for the team. Because now they've shown a whole lot of different ways to beat you.
Yes.
We want to jump out early. Check. Or quarterback play great. Check. Mm-hmm. Come from behind win. Check. Quarterback turn the ball over. Doesn't play great. Our defense and running game will beat the brakes off you. That was a game that was not even as close to final score. 30-14. They were up 23-0. This game was over.
Mm-hmm. Both those interceptions, too, weren't Patty Mahomes' fault. The first one was his fault. The second one, him and Tyreek Hill, a little miscommunication. Nick, I've been going over this with Nick. About 60% of all interceptions are partially to blame on that wide receiver.
C and I were watching football together yesterday. We see one pick that's a receiver's fault. He says 50% of interceptions are wide receiver's fault.
Yeah.
And then we see another one. He's like, I've been telling you, 55%. And now today we're at 60%.
You work the numbers.
Good thing we don't have a six-hour show. Rams and Seahawks. 100%.
By the end.
There was no stopping Todd Gurley, who ran for 3 touchdowns. Rams win this one 33-31. They remain undefeated. CC, have the Rams cemented themselves as the best team in the NFL?
I think so. This was a quality win for them. A divisional opponent who they embarrassed last season. So, you know, Seattle, they play a lot better at home. They respond this year after that embarrassment. And it was a tough football game. You want to be able to win these types of divisional games and not play your best football. Impressed with Jared Goff, how he led this offense without two of his weapons, Kupp and Brandon Cooks, both out of the lineup with concussions during the game.
If the Rams aren't the best team in the league, they're the second best team in the league, and it's very close. They and the Chiefs right now, I think you can make an argument for either one. But what I will give the Rams and Sean McVay enormous credit for is being who you preach you are. Sean McVay said after the game, I can't claim to be this aggressive coach and then have a chance on 4th-and-1 to win the game and not trust my team to go get that yard. Let Jared Goff do the quarterback sneak, prevent Russell Wilson from getting the ball
back. And you can't tell your team you're that aggressive coach and send a mixed message. So I'd like to follow through by the coach.
Absolutely.
All right, moving on to the Broncos and the Jets.
I got Brandon Cooks.
That's what impressed me.
After 3,000-yard seasons, you think I put an S on his name.
Good job.
Not last segment you didn't. Rookie Sam Darnold finished with 198 yards, 3 touchdowns, and an interception. Jets get the win 34-16. Chris, how impressive did Sam Darnold look to you yesterday?
Sam Darnold looked good, but there was someone on the field even more impressive. And that's Isaiah Crowell, the running back. Oh, my goodness. He was outstanding. So the Jets with a running game, yeah, Sam Darnold makes some big-time throws. You can see the growth of the quarterback. His deep threat, Robbie Anderson, had the biggest game of his season to be able to bring that punch back to the offense. But their ability to be physical, and Crowell looked like a special running back during the game, Nick.
Crowell looked outstanding, and I'm going to reveal a confidence here. Maybe I shouldn't. Robbie was dealing with some frustration during the week, reached out to you. You did your normal pep talk, which is, man, the NFL is supposed to be hard. Get your life together.
Yes.
And he responded with his best game
get
of the
tougher.
Season. And so Robbie Anderson was good. Crowell was outstanding.
Same thing I tell you.
All the time.
Yep. And Sam Darnold, I told y'all.
Your feelings are not my problem.
laughed at me last week.
Sue loved that.
I said, Darnold's due for a good game after 3 bad ones.
Yes.
He had his good game. Like, Darnold's not going to have all bad games. It was a good game against a tough defense.
We literally had whole conversation while you were talking.
I just keep going. Just power through it.
Hey, not sure anyone saw this coming. Packers and Lions. Aaron Rodgers spent the week complaining about his offense. Might have a new gripe. Mason Crosby, the kicker, missed four field goals and an extra point to leave 13 points off the board. Rodgers didn't help. Lost a pair of fumbles. The lone bright spot, he did finish with 442 yards and three touchdowns. One here to Devontae Adams, but it wasn't enough. Lions win. Green Bay now 2-2-1. Here's Aaron Rodgers after the game.
I gave him 10. You know, we missed field goals, obviously, and had a turnover on the one-yard line. You put all that together, that's a lot of points we gave him. And mine were important. You know, we held him to a field goal the one time and then gave up a touchdown before the half in a two-minute drive. So I got to play better in the first half. Second half got in the groove, but you know, myself and our offense got to put together a full game one of these days.
All right, Nick, do the Packers or CC, do the Packers have serious problems, or was Sunday lost just because of the kicker?
No, Nick and I believe they both have they have problems, not only with their kicker, who has been so consistent, and, you know, he's one of the few kickers that has some job security. But, you know, Nick and I, we worry about Mike McCarthy.
Man.
Does he have job security?
Oh, because if he does, he shouldn't. He shouldn't.
And the reason why is Aaron Rodgers sends out a message last week. And that wasn't just a message to the media. That was a message to the organization. Talked about the play design. Talked about them not getting Adams the ball. And then they have a week of practice where he got three of his top four guys who aren't going to practice. Now, Aaron Rodgers is the most talented quarterback in the NFL. But you need to throw to someone. And when you can't practice with players, it just carried right over to the game. And this first half of the game, I mean, they looked like they didn't spend any time at practice. There was no type of in syncness as far as Aaron, his reads. Aaron looked like he wanted to be someplace else. So I was totally shocked. This looked like a team that was not motivated when they took the field in Detroit.
What does Mike McCarthy do well? I mean, I'm just
offensive
asking.
Play design.
Okay. In theory, I at no point am I like, man, thank God for that brilliant schematic edge Aaron Rodgers got this week, or else he'd have been screwed. I know Mike McCarthy a few years ago thought he was getting too heavily criticized, and he came out and defended himself, and he said, I've accomplished a lot in this league. I'm a good coach in this league. Okay, well, show me. Because what I see is a team that can come out unprepared. I don't put the field goals on him. Obviously, listen, Crosby's been a good kicker in this league for a decade. He had a terrible game. I don't put that on Mike McCarthy. But what about it? Mason Crosby wasn't playing defense. Mason Crosby wasn't playing punt return. Like, what about all the simple errors? Like, okay, you're not a defensive coach. Aaron Rodgers, your quarterback, so the offense, while you can help, it's mostly taken care of. Are you detail-oriented? Are you a team that's super buttoned up, never comes out flat? I'm just asking because I know this. Ted Thompson lost his job. And so they decided the team was underperforming enough to where we need to make a change in general manager.
They changed the general manager and changed several of the coaches.
They changed the quarterback's coach, Alex Van Pelt.
Okay. All right, so listen, you're 2-2-1. The Vikings are struggling. The Bears, they still have questions at quarterback, even though I know Trubisky had that huge game. They were off this week. All right, get it together by the end of this year. Because I think it's the last 47 games the Packers are 23-23-1. It's over some giant sample. It might be 47 games, it might be 49 games. But they're a 500 team with the most talented quarterback in the league. I know he missed some of that time. Okay, Mike McCarthy. Like, the seat's getting warm. We talk about Jason Garrett underperforming, I understand that, but he hasn't been dealt a full deck at quarterback or at the wide receiver position. Like, if I'm running the Packers, I have this conversation, which is, if defense is what has killed us for years and Rodgers is our quarterback, does it make sense to have the head coach be an offensive guy? Or do we need a head coach that can really button up the defense and let Rodgers handle the offensive side of it?
And then add a little wrinkle to it is that Rodgers has basically called out Mike McCarthy. Last week, he had questions about the play calling. And you know, if you have a guy like Aaron Rodgers who isn't on the exact same page with your coach, there's reason to look at your coach.
They looked like a team that took the field, Jenna, disconnected. They looked like the guys on the team, they heard that press conference, and they're there every day. They know more about the situation. So they felt the tension. Aaron Rodgers, with an offense that's depleted during the week, So what kind of chemistry do you think that they had during the week? He's throwing to practice squad guys. And let's not forget what Aaron Rodgers said this summer about his friend Jordy Nelson. Man, it'd be awful nice to have Jordy Nelson around here. And I got all these other guys I got to work with. So this, we got to keep our eyes on the situation there in Green Bay. Because that team yesterday, that's not the type of team that needs to be in the playoffs. And their leader for me the first 30 minutes, he looked like he was not motivated to play football there in Detroit.
You can't go into a game and have and get out coached by Matt Patricia in his fifth game as an NFL coach. You can't.
By the way, Matt Patricia's two wins against the Packers and the Patriots this year, not bad.
And so I don't know. I'm really frustrated because I don't, as a sports fan, you only get so many generational players to watch through their prime. And when you feel like one is being squandered, it is frustrating. And I feel like that is what we're dealing with right now with Aaron Rodgers and the Packers.
All right, we're going to take a break. Coming up, does Odell Beckham have a right to be frustrated with Eli and the Giants? That's next on First Things First. On Thursday, Carson Wentz and the Eagles battle Saquon Barkley and the Giants in a fierce divisional showdown. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox NFL Network and streaming on Prime Video.
It's a loser leaves town match for the Giants. Season on life support. They lose Thursday. They unplug in the machine.
It's over. I can't wait to blow the flames when I get on my
show, baby.
Speaking
of the Giants, back here with Bart Scott, the guy having all the fun right now. The Giants and Panthers served up a whole lot of Odell Beckham Jr., the good, bad, and ugly. Before the game, he was critical of Eli and the Giants' play calling. During the game, he did Eli's job. You saw that touchdown to Saquon Barkley, longest pass play for the Giants all season. In the fourth quarter, first touchdown catch, Eli to Odell, pulls the Giants within three, less than 2 minutes to go. Saquon scores on the 15-yard pass, and this was all but over. Oh, hold on, because Graham Gano said, oh, I can do this, from 63 yards out at the buzzer. Panthers win 33-31 after the game. A heated head coach, Pat Shurmur, addressed the Odell situation.
Listen, I'm going to answer all the drama questions right now, and I'm going to go back to what I said. All right? I addressed it with Odell. I addressed it with our team. I publicly declared that I didn't agree with his comments. And I asked anybody that was interested, if they wanted clarification, go to Odell because he's a big man. Now, I'm not going to give the public a pound of flesh on this, right? That would make me small, not strong. And these are the kind of things, in my opinion, when you have the locker room that we have, that will help galvanize them, because the locker room took care of it. And that's all I'm saying on it. Finito.
I'm trying to be a leader. This is a position that I've never been in. I'm trying to grow. I'm learning on the way, so I'm on the fly. But I'm proud of where we went today. We gave it all. We came against adversity, calls here and there, and you know we can never rely on the refs to win the game, but there was calls here and there that were questionable or this and that, and we kept fighting. And that's all I could ask for.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bart Scott doesn't often take notes. He brings this gigantic iPad out, and then he types a bunch of things. He wrote notes for the first time during that segment, and your reaction was priceless. So please tell the audience what was going through your head.
Let me fan the flames. I hate
some flames. Pat Shurmur was big mad yesterday.
Big man. I held him accountable. Ain't nobody held Odell accountable since he's been there. That's the problem. They should have nipped this in the bud when he was a rookie over there making love to the net or whatever the hell he was doing and urinating on the ground, allegedly. Right. You know, like, come on, man. Like, I'm trying to be a leader. I'm learning on the fly. I put right here, Chris Carter School of Leadership. You need to pull this dude aside. I know you got Robbie Anderson in check, but somebody need to hold it, put this dude in check.
He ain't answering my calls anymore.
How do you do that?
I don't know,
that?
Man. Too much of that sulfur soaking in for that head and shoulders, man, damaging his brain cells.
Can I ask a question real quick?
He ain't figured it out.
All right, since
you killing me, Petey.
Hold on. Since evidently Odell's going to get fried today on every show
gonna
on
get
every
fried.
Network. Let me ask you this.
Toasted.
Did it appear that his pregame comments hurt the Giants?
Yeah.
How?
Because, let me tell you something, if you want to be a leader, now you got to address and fix all these relationships. Now, it's great if you win, but now you lost by a 63-yard field goal. The same thing that ruined their season last year, remember?
It was a loss after the
Philadelphia Eagles. You're 1-4. Now you're pointing fingers. Now you got guys that are going to play good soldier, but in the backside, they're like, I hate this dude. This dude is he's a selfish eye guy. Whatever you are, money makes you more of it. And he is a self-absorbed baby.
Hold on a second.
I listened to that interview. He's talking about, oh, look at these other guys and what I should be getting. Me, me, me. I broke records, but I did this, but. So how can the offense be that bad and you being out-schemed if you're breaking records, throwing your quarterback under the bus? You know what the hell you signed up for? You knew Eli, they bought into Eli.
You could have told you know,
you'd have had, yeah, you'd have Deshaun Watson. Say I'm going to the market. Go to the market if you want to, you know, be around quarterbacks that can extend plays. You can play playground football. You made your bed. You got to lie in it. And you wanted that cash, money, homie.
And Bart, you know this. If you're going to be a leader, you can't tell the truth. That's what leaders do. People say, oh, man, leaders, that's what they...
Politicians lie to us every day.
Well, those aren't the best leaders and the best examples.
But
when you're in a team sport, you can't tell the truth. We can talk to each other in the truth behind, but when we go out to the media, we're going to be like the family's intact. It's no different than your family. Like my mom would tell you, man, we can argue like cats and dogs. I better not hear about any of our family business out in the streets. And that's the way an NFL team is. That's the way locker rooms are. And when you're playing team sports, you can't be an individual. One of the things that surprised me about that was Odell's been an elite athlete at every level he's been at. He said, I've never been a leader.
Did he say I've never been or I'm trying to learn how?
He said I'm learning on the fly.
I'm learning on the fly.
He said I've never been.
So that means he's never been a
no, school he said I've preacher never right been put in this position. Even at LSU, he wasn't a leader. Jarvis Landry was more of a leader. We saw Jarvis Landry in Hard Knocks. You hear that stuff that he was saying?
Yeah.
Those are leadership things. Everyone is not meant to be a leader.
Even if he's your best player, that doesn't mean he's the leader.
Okay, I get all of it. But the Eli comment he shouldn't have said, I understand that. That because even though it's honest, even though it's accurate, there is no win there. But this, when people say he should have helped, kept it behind closed doors, from what I understand, he tried that route.
It doesn't work, though, Nick. You're still in team sports. You got to keep... Do you think all those years when I had all those bad quarterbacks, when I made them 8 Pro Bowls, I think I had 8 different quarterbacks playing, do you think that was all fun and games?
No.
Denny Green used to tell me, because I used to go off. I used to have a tantrum all over the field. I used to do Odell Beckham did 20 years ago. So I know I'm an expert in making yourself look like a fool. And I know, looking back on it, man, that was not a good look. I wish that I would have said... Man, I said some things. I threw our team under the bus when I tried to break the NFL record. We lost the play. We lost the game against the Bengals, the last game, to go to the playoff, and I wasn't even concerned about the playoffs. I was concerned about breaking the NFL record. So I know I've been there. I've been selfish, but I've been a leader at every level, and I did make mistakes as a leader, but I corrected those mistakes.
So listen, obviously you have like real lived experience of doing and living what Odell's going through and making some of the same mistakes. The point that I'm making is this. All of that comment was about the offense and the offense needing to do this, the offense needing to do that. I don't know how we can sit here on the day after the offense scores the most points they've scored in 2.5 years.
It wasn't
and
because
say
of
they
him.
Hurt.
Because
no,
you know the reason
no, no,
why
I know that it wasn't because of him, just real quick. But we can't say it hurt the offense. We can't say
it hurts that team.
It's going to hurt the team in the long run.
And forget, what look at your resume. Look at the things you've done before.
Boat trip.
But oh, come on. Like, have you done anything positive as being a leader? Yesterday it got so bad, you know that Odell, he's supposed to be leading Sterling Shepard. Sterling Shepard decides that he wants to complain. He wants to lift up the garbage can and dump it over.
Attitude,
who's trying to tell
Odell is? Isn't that a good thing that Odell
no,
trying?
No, because he saw Odell do it. So Odell's saying, no, don't do what I did. No, do opposite. No. Let me do the same thing because no one said anything to you when you were doing it. So you can't lead that way when you've already showed yourself to be a bad example in front of your teammates.
Attitude reflects leadership.
Tell me, you keep bringing up teammates. What happens in the locker room when someone, when Snacks or anyone reads some of these comments?
Well, he's the alpha male there, and he's got the job security. He's not going anywhere. Eli's never been the type of leader that'll pull a guy to the side and hold them accountable. You know, so now what is he going to do? So now Eli's like, man.
What you're
like,
going to have today is a bunch of guys lying. And trying to protect them. Be like, oh, no, we don't have any problems.
It's going to fracture.
No, it didn't happen. But behind that, their real feelings are they are affected. And there's nothing they can do. They're powerless.
The coach said, oh, the locker room handled it. You can handle it. That dude got guaranteed money.
But let me ask you guys this question, because when you're talking about you dealt with this type of frustration and you kept it behind closed doors, I would imagine there were times that Jake Reed or Robert Smith or whomever else on offense was frustrated like you were. Like, what if the guys in the locker room, aside from Eli, agree with Odell?
It don't matter.
You still don't say it.
Okay, that's fine.
You never, ever tell the truth. Part of our bond, and that's what we're going to go down. We're going to the grave with this. No one is going to know the truth. Like, it's no different than when we started developing this team. We are a lot better than we were last year, and you guys know there were segments last year that you wanted to scream, pull your hair out, but you didn't go and tell no one, all right? You wouldn't let nobody know that. You wouldn't let that people on the TV see that. Why? Because you're on the dang on team now, and the team becomes more important than your individual feelings.
What are you knocking about?
I knock because real men go address people face to face. You don't be passive aggressive through the media. You don't air your dirty laundry out with the media. You got a problem with the offense? You go knock on the door. You have a man to man with the head coach. Like, yo, I'm not being used.
But we got to figure some things out.
It didn't happen.
Hold on.
Because they wouldn't be shocked by the comment.
No, you can hold on a second.
I'm not going to give him credit for that, Nick.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't either.
That's passive aggressive. He's being passive aggressive. Is Eli the part of the problem?
Well, meanwhile,
help me, Weezy. Come on, man. Get the hell out of here, bro. Be a man then. Drop him and say something.
You got something to say? The New York Giants are suddenly 1-4 and appear to be fractured. Is it because of Odell? Would you point to Odell?
I mean, he didn't help it out. You know, they could have been fractured. You know, listen, I would love to have a list with Chris about who played with the worst quarterbacks. You know what I mean? I think my list is pretty good, too. And I've been on elite defensive teams.
Right.
Super Bowl worthy defensive teams.
How many times they put that mic in your face and you just flat lie?
Hey, listen, I just do my job, Holmes. I don't farm other people's land. We over here doing what we got to do. If they don't score, they don't win.
Okay, that's all fair. To answer your question, though, if we're talking about reasons the Giants are 1-4, slices of the pie, Odell might be the smallest slice. Now, moving forward, maybe he's a big part of the problem. But you can't point to a single game, including yesterday, where Odell wasn't a part of the solution as opposed to a part of the problem.
Nice turnover.
What? He did. He had one turnover, one drop.
If you drop the ball on fourth down, you don't convert. Who get the ball, Bart?
Okay, their two biggest plays of the game.
I ain't the smartest man, but I think the other team.
Okay, and their two biggest plays of the game, who made them? I mean,
but the offensive coordinator did call them.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay, so this is the thing, Nick. If you're going to play team sports, regardless if you like the players or not, there are certain rules that you got to play by. And if he decides not, then that locker room will be fragmented. They will have problems. Bart and I, we know this because we have said enough dumb things.
Oh, yeah.
All right? We said enough dumb things and apologized about them because we realized after the fact.
I just got in my ear. Screw the commercials. We going. We roll. I just got in my ear.
Speaking of dumb things, they do pay. Mark, stick around. Coming up, how worried should the Eagles be after yet another loss? That's next up, First Things First. Part. Entertaining Bart Scott. We're going viral. J.R. Smith has become a huge Browns fan since moving to Cleveland, so he was on the gram. Instagram story going crazy when the team won yesterday.
Terry Crews?
He's not the only one excited about the Browns. Check out what Hugh Jackson said to his team after the game.
You are becoming something special, I'm telling you. If you guys will keep working and do what we're asking you to do, great things are going to happen. You guys broke another streak today. We got to win in the division! Listen to me. But that's nothing. Listen, that's nothing, because we got a lot more to do. That's nothing. So before we pray and get ready to get out of here, there is Victory Monday.
Stop it. It's too early for Victory Monday. Still
I mean,
got work to do.
They already got a day off. They're like,
that's usually in November you get Victory Monday. You get Victory Monday off basically September.
Not only did they win in their division for the first time in years, they won on Sunday for the first time since 2015. A Sunday win for the Browns.
Bart, if I'm in the locker room there, I'm going to tell you, I tell Hugh, man, we thank you for that. Yeah. I get the team together. Tell them, hey, guys, we're going to all show up tomorrow. We're going to show up a little bit later. We're going to all watch some film. We're going to all work out, get a couple hours in and out, and then we'll be done with it. That's the better way to be able to follow
it. Yeah, it's too early.
Up.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm happy for Hugh because, you know, it's been a long time coming. He took a lot of arrows. I think, you know, Tyrod Taylor going down early really energized his team. Mm-hmm. Baker Mayfield, you know, this defense is elite, and it's always
always tough to play in that stadium. No matter how bad they are, they always play well. Now they're learning how to finish, and it was a big win.
They still need a new kicker. I ain't never seen a 34-yard knuckleball that didn't get tipped like that. Kicker, I looked it up, man. He was 68% in college. They need a new kicker.
All right, moving on to the Vikings and Eagles. Both teams needing a big win. Only one would get one, and that would be Minnesota. Kirk Cousins finds Adam Thielen. Vikings take a 17-3 halftime lead. Eagles trying to make a comeback. Carson Wentz finds Zach Ertz for the touchdown to pull within two with a minute left. Eagles try the onside kick, but guess who's there? Adam Thielen makes the recovery, because what can't Thielen do? Eagles fall to 2-3. The Minnesota Vikings get the revenge win. Here is Carson Wentz.
We got to take a real hard look in the mirror. Little mistakes like that, and kind of the same thing I really echoed last week after the game. These little mistakes that sometimes can go overlooked are just killing us. And we're playing like we're a young rookie team, and we're not. And so we got to really be hard on ourselves and learn from these mistakes and turn it around fast.
It's net.
We're back on TV, Bart.
Oh, my bad.
Bart was pointing out he and Carson Wentz bought the shirt from the same place. Bart's now embarrassed, so he's claiming his was custom.
Well, mine's is custom. Listen, my neck used to be 23 inches, man. You can't just buy that off the rack, bro.
Well, you have to have a hefty neck to hold that head.
Hey, absolutely. Bobblehead, baby.
Get
us on track, Jenna.
Neck size.
Jenna, get us
honestly
on track.
Bart, how concerned should this Eagles team be after falling to 2-3 right now?
Well, listen, they still celebrate, man. They still hung over from the Super Bowl. They celebrated.
5 weeks in?
Yeah, they still celebrated.
It's a big hangover.
Now Carson Wentz is coming back. The good thing is the rest of the division is real mediocre right now, so they're going to have opportunity. Alshon Jeffrey's coming back. What they need to fix is this secondary, because the front seven is good. This secondary is horrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw guys falling for the banana in the tailpipe. I saw guys get spent around, which is hard to do. I'm talking about eek. I'm talking about they need to put some WD-40 on them knees. Like, some guys were getting spent around Darby. They're going to have to figure this thing out on the back end. They're going to have to start playing a little bit less aggressive, you know, having to put two safeties over the top and say, okay, if you're going to beat us, you're going to run the football, because they're trying to put eight men in the box and leaving those corners on the island. They can't perform.
Right, and they're going off the resume of last season. One of the reasons why we talk about their big people, offensive, defensive line being better than everyone else, but their secondary played above their head last season. Yeah. They got great secondary play. They had Patrick Robinson, their nickelback, went on to New Orleans in free agency. He was one of the best nickelbacks. So they have not been able to shore up when they play nickel and dime coverage. Getting off the field on third down has been a problem for the Eagles. But I just do believe with Carson Wentz, that does help them. You can see that the team moves at a different pace. But their lack of Nelson Aguilar dominating in the slot the way he did last year, and with Wallace being out, they don't have that deep threat to be able to go with Alshon Jeffrey. Because Alshon, on occasion, can slip deep, but he is not the normal deep threat that you need having this type of offense. So I do have concerns about the Eagles. Their secondary, that is concern, is real. So now the pressure is on Jim Schwartz. How do I match up this year's rush with last year's great coverage? Now what do I do? Do I play more conservative, rely on a three- or four-man rush, and commit more people to drop in to help out that back end?
And there seemed to be a few cracks as far as in the unity. Jason Peters, one of the best leaders in the league.
Hall of Famer.
After the game, he was talking about the offensive line struggles. And he said, listen, we got a quarterback coming off an injury who's trying to make a play. So he's holding onto the ball a little bit longer, and we have to block a little bit longer. Mm. Like, that is, I mean, that is, I know you're supposed to keep all that in-house. Big deal. And so Jason Peters has earned, by the way, with 15 years of being a great leader and a great player in this league. I agree with you, Hall of Famer. And one of the potential three Hall of Fame left tackles in that same division, actually. But regardless, so now you're seeing a little, even if it's unintentional, finger pointing. Like, maybe Carson's holding on to the ball longer, trying to make plays. What I see is Lane Johnson getting whooped for strip sacks 2 weeks in a row. Yeah. I see.
Yeah. And a dominant offensive line.
And I see a defense that made the Titans offense all of a sudden, oh man, they're clicking. And then the Titans this week went right back to being the Titans offense we've seen the last year and a half, where they struggled to move the football. Last year, there were seven games they won decisively where it was not even a question in the fourth quarter. This year, they're 2-3, and those two wins, Atlanta's got the ball in the red zone, chance to win. Indy's got the ball in the red zone, chance to win. Like, even their wins have not been decisive.
Well, everybody eventually catches up, and what happens is now they're the Super Bowl champs, so now they're being chased. It's easy to be the underdog, and they relished in that role, but now you have to bring your best every single week, every single play. Everybody's trying to make a name off of you. And now the film's out there. So now they've seen it for the first time. They've seen what has been successful against it. They've seen what you don't do against it. And they understand your philosophy. And we hear those comments a lot about Ben Roethlisberger, right? He's being able to hold on to the football, buy time with your feet so you can have explosive plays downfield. The hardest thing, especially for a young quarterback, is to take what the defense gives them. You know, Carson Wentz reminds me a little bit of Andrew Luck, as he believes in his arm, he believes in his talent, and he's taking more chances than he needs to be. He needs to understand that he has a great team around him, and just sometimes, you know, taking less is more sometimes, and not trying to make the explosive play. Great plays and greatness are defined by doing the little things on a consistent basis. Anybody can do the big splash plays. The great ones do the little things. Just look at Brady. He's going to take exactly what the defense gives you, and it's death by a thousand paper cuts.
All right, you know, we talked all week about which of these two teams needed this win more. These were two teams that were coming in, both trying to get onto some sort of, you know, momentum swing, and it looked like the Vikings were the ones that wanted this more and needed this more. Yeah. Did their win yesterday, was it convincing enough to say, okay, this Vikings team is back on track?
I don't think so. I mean, Dalvin Cook, you know, they're still trying to figure out everything with Kirk Cousins. In that division, they're the third best team in that division right now, and they went all in. You know, because they have some high-priced guys on that team, some high salaries. They have a window of maybe 1 to 2 more years before they have to break this thing up and some guys, you know, start to decline. You know, you look at really right now what Chicago is doing within that division. They're a young version, I believe, a mix of, you know, Kansas City, you know, the Rams. But then the difference is they have an elite defense, so they can beat you ugly. And then Green Bay, we know where Green Bay can be, and Aaron Rodgers is always in every game. They're in trouble. It was more desperate. It was more important for them to get a win, to start feeling good. You hope that Everson Griffin can get, you know, exercise his demons and come back. But he's the vocal leader on that side of the ball, and they need his presence badly.
They do miss Griffin. It was nice to see that the secondary didn't give up the big plays that we've seen them uncustomarily be able to give up in the last several weeks. But their story offensively is Adam Thielen and Kirk Cousins. Adam Thielen, NFL record, starting the season, 5 straight 100-yard games, breaking the mark that Isaac Bruce and I think Randy Moss started the season with.
Jerry Rice as well.
Tremendous feat for him as a undrafted guy from the state of Minnesota, homegrown talent that, if you think about all the star talent that they have, all the high draft capital that they have on this team, to think that Adam Thielen right now is their most consistent player. Tremendous story of what he's doing there in Minneapolis. They are a passing football team.
And that's the thing is, they've needed every bit of Adam Thielen because they still can't run the ball. They went into the game, which is odd. But you see, here's something, maybe it's not as surprising, because going into the year, your big concern about them was the offensive line. Now, usually when we talk about offensive line woes, we think about what's going on with the Giants. Like, quarterback doesn't have time.
Right.
But maybe the offensive line problem has been run blocking right now, because they went into the game running the ball on a fewer percentage of snaps than any team in the league yesterday. 23 carries for just 77 yards. Now, Dalvin Cook didn't play, but he hadn't been very good this year. He looked great pre-ACL injury last year. This was an excellent step in the right direction for Minnesota.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.